Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com view presentation. Starring me, yes. Anyway, okay, so I did have a debate about physics this week. And so I'll I'll leave a link in the YouTube video. I could probably put one somewhere on this page, but you can find it anyway. Draft physics. I think there's a link there. Anyway, no, debatephysics.com. I spent hours arguing with this guy plus his minions and about science, and it was incredibly futile. I mean, they won't take a single argument seriously. And it's sort of like that with these kind of conversations. And it's it's depressing that it's not just about people being stupid. Like, I feel like, okay, you should just be able to write the Four Dummies book and be done with it. But it's getting people to, it's not, you can do this cliche open mind thing, but it's, it doesn't say enough, about how to communicate with people, because they can think they're open-minded, but they're really not. And they, they put up a barrier, and you just can't get through it. The modern mystic used an analogy that the old locks used to have a little thing on them, a little cover, and, people are just blocked, and, no key will get in because you got to remove the block first. And I've sort of metaphored that in other ways in the years that I have been struggling to find the right words to communicate what I see as really simple ideas. We're just biological machines. We're essentially robots. As much as we like to think of our own personality as something of our own creation, it's really not. You're a product of your environment, and all these little things that happened to you decided what kind of disposition you had and how much of a player longer you were, or how much of a not compliant, I think you know what I'm trying to say. Some of us are, hatched, and, we're just not going to do what everybody else does and, walk into the traps and say thank you, and all of that crap. You might even be... it's more than just dissatisfied, less accepting of some jargon about how it's all for the best and it's all worth it and it's all silver lining and all that kind of crap. But again, that gets to some, I think, silly argument about being a pessimist versus an optimist versus whatever the realist is. that's really what we're all seeking, is the truth. I would think. See, that's the tricky part, right? I think people think they're seeking the truth, but they're only seeking a truth that's compatible, comforting. That's maybe the better word, comforting. And makes their life more enjoyable, because that's the only thing they're really looking for out of their life. They're not too worried about this whole idea of what's written on your tombstone or something. That the net product of their life should be that the world, the sentient beings on Earth, ended up being better off because you were here. You caused less grief and harm. You caused less. That's the idea. You mitigated against, let's put it that way, harms that would have taken place if you weren't here. Okay, so you did more rescuing than you did pushing people into quicksand. You saved more than you pushed in. Maybe that's a simple way to say it. And, you know, that should be our rational objective, you know, thinking-wise. So that's one of these philosophical points that you try to make in a Four Dummies book, is that, you know, your sentient brain is just one valuable thing that needs to be taken care of. And all the other diamonds also need to be polished and oiled, you know, so they don't rust. You know, they have to be cared for. Just there just isn't much in need of that as you are. I guess if we were like flowers in a garden and there's only so much water and all that kind of crap, so you do have to recognize that it is in that context that we exist, and that there's some people just ain't going to get watered, and there's some animals that aren't going to get watered, and that's the hard part to say, oh, that's all okay, that's acceptable. You know, those kind of prices are worth it. We're worth it. And that's where I think the whole conversation breaks down, in the sense that people are thinking that there's profit in those expenses, and that somehow, that there's somehow not enough of a liability. That is, it's not enough of a poison apple. You know, a few tortured souls is an acceptable price, you know, for the charm of their existence. And I'd say that's violating that simple principle of recognizing that you have to leave the place better off, and you're not leaving it better off if you're sustaining a bunch of mechanisms that create a bunch of unnecessary harm and cruelty and reckless reproduction and, you know, reckless statements about how life is worth it, you know, without any conditions. You know, it's just silly. So, I mean, I could argue. I mean, I've argued it before. I mean, I couldn't personally say, all right, you have to, you know, spend an hour torturing a rabbit to live the next 10 years. If I have to do it, come on. No, I don't think so. And we do a lot worse than torture a one rabbit. With every decision we make, we compromise other people's welfare all the time. You know, we bribe them into, we extort them into working jobs that are too dangerous, too risky, you know, and cause all kinds of harm, you know, because we want our comforts, and we're willing to pay a price for it as long as we don't have to kill our dinner. You know, as long as you don't have to go out and, you know, look Porky in the eye, you know, and then stick a knife in his neck, it's all acceptable. So as long as it's not up close and personal. So that would be another one of these Four Dummies things that you would say, yeah, the first rule is you can't cheat. Okay, so you really do have to accept that you really have, you know, committed the crime if you've paid somebody else to do it, or if you've endorsed a system that allows it to happen, and pretended it's an acceptable dysfunction of society. Let's say that, you know, some kids don't get enough vitamins, and some kids don't get enough education, and they don't get enough culture, and they don't get enough this, and they don't get enough that, and they grow up to be an asshole. And, you know, we shouldn't say that's acceptable, because they were just unlucky. They were born to the wrong household. That's a really poor excuse. So, you know, the argument can be made, okay, just about how broken the civilization is, without even talking about the fact that, well, it goes deeper, in the sense that even if you could fix a lot of the problems, it's still not good enough. Because you kill everybody. You know, and as long as you're going to kill everybody, whoever exists, and in most cases, kill them, slowly. You're going to slowly eat them to death with some disease or disability. And it's going to be harsh and brutal and nasty. And that's not doing them a favor. Injecting them into a system where they have some sense of the importance of their existence, and then it's all going to be just taken away and turned into shit. It's not rational to say, good plan, make more babies. All right, so that's where I started anyway. The Life for Dummies seems like a good idea for a book title. But again, it's really so simple. And the argument is, first, how do you get people to read it? And how do you get people to have enough integrity to pay attention? Not just to dismiss it as, well, you don't believe in God, and that's, you're evil. You're driven by the devil. You're full of Satan juice. How do you get past all of that kind of crap? Especially when people find that they think they're walking the moral high ground by being a religious kook. They think those Ten Commandments cover it or something, and that's all they have to do. And so they don't really have to prophet the future. They just have to avoid being, gluttonously foolish and evil. Kill other people for $10 or something. Oh, there, I get to go to heaven because I didn't kill anybody for $10. Pretty stupid. Pretty low standards of functionality. And it doesn't really say you have to do anything good. You just have to not do something disgustingly bad. And in the religion, it's okay to torture animals and all that crap. So, yeah, you can still have your barbecue fun. And, it should be not that difficult to explain to people how that's ridiculous. Sentience and sensation are the value that we exist in, and that's the only thing that has value, is the welfare of the feeling things. And if you're not improving their condition, you're not doing anything good. All right, that's probably a simple enough statement. It's been a tough week, sorry. I just never thought that this would be the hard part, is being able to present a logical argument and have people rationally evaluate it and not just, knee-jerk spitting on it or something. I mean, it's just, I didn't expect that, especially from people who are reasonably articulate and even read, well-read, not to be able to understand simple concepts like, yeah, we're just pieces of biology, and I think I'm pretty interesting, but so do the other pieces of biology. And it's really just understanding that yes, we're all writing a very nice little book of our lives, and we all think it's meaningful and important because it's us. And that's really not hard to understand, that yeah, we all have that delusion that somehow we're doing it better. We're certainly doing it better than those thems. But it really doesn't matter if you don't appreciate that the welfare of all of the brains has to be included in the definition of what did you do with your existence. And you have to do the whole thing some good, not just your brain some good. If you did a bunch of other brains bad, then you're not a winner. You lost the game. is the game really is the net. You have to be on net, profitable. You had to be a positive influence on life on Earth, or you failed to function to the minimum standard of not being called a blight and an asshole. Yeah, simple enough. All right, so I was just thinking. So then the point I'm trying to make, and the argument about how, I was trying to make these physics arguments that I think are really simple, and they are of no interest to the vast majority of people. And that surprises me also, how few people are interested in teasing the facts that we have available and, manipulating them, twisting them around, see where they end up. And that sort of gets to people's perception of things. I can talk about the fact that, even if the universe is, huge, and there's zillions of stars, billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of possible planets, I could still argue the unlikelihood of those things, anything even becoming alive, that is doing the replicating cell, and and then evolving and then having a neuron, when neurons only happened once. It's only a one-time event, and there was no other thing like a neuron. Like, there was some other version of something like a neuron. No, there never was, there isn't. There's only one way to make a brain, and that's using these electrical cells. And it's sort of like comparing it to a computer program or something, saying something like, well, C++ would be invented by all civilizations. No, it wouldn't. And it wouldn't be written the same way, and it'd be completely different and work completely different. So I mean, the code wouldn't, there's absolutely no likelihood of duplicating the code, and without the code you can't make all this progression. And so it's an interesting subject, though, to talk about, what the stages are and steps are of evolution, and what the barriers are to things happening. Now, I could simply point out that, we had a brain that could go to high school before we had high schools. Now, that's not very sensible. Evolution doesn't really do that kind of thing, where it gives you an ability to do something that you can't do, okay? It gave you the ability to bowl a perfect game, but there's no pool, but there's no bowling alleys. So it is a strange perversion of the evolutionary process, in that it was almost like it's double error code. It wasn't just that it was a mutation. It was a mutation that had no value, and yet it was kept long enough for us to develop language and then build schools. It's an interesting subject, yet there's only a tiny percentage of the human race that has any interest in discussing those subjects. And even when you bring them up, the knee-jerkers just show up and say, but there's billion and billion stars. There has to be all kinds of other people everywhere. So there's almost no point in saying it. I'm just saying the level of that disinterest in picking at the standard view of reality. It's surprisingly amazing how few people. So I guess I could analogize that. What just popped into my head was one of those things for me, where I was quite certain, Soylent Green was, when I read the book, I had the normal reaction, like, oh, eating people, oh, that's disgusting, ooh, blah, blah, blah. And then when I actually watched the movie, I started to think about it. I said, yeah, their lives really suck, And why not? I mean, it's green potato chips. Who the fuck cares? Do I care that it's made out of dead people? Who the fuck cares? If it's a good potato chip, give me some. What's the big deal? I mean, you know, if you're eating people by, you know, putting a dead person on the table and, you know, carving them up, well, yeah, that could be a little bit woozy. You know, it might get a little woozy. But as a potato chip, you know, come on. I'm not going to care. You know, I'm not going to x-ray it and to see if I can find a human being in it. I eat them now without thinking about any of that. I don't worry about what the hell it was made out of. You just eat it because it tastes good, so who cares? And, you know, I just thought that there really isn't... The only thing that bothered me was some silly impulse reaction that says, ooh, it's disgusting. And then all you have to do is break that a little bit, and all of a sudden you can say, yeah, if, you know, if I was in a plane crash and I had to eat the dead, yeah, who cares? It's, you know, why is it going to bother me? But as a vegetarian, you know, it's probably going to upset my stomach. But anyway, you know, you have to get your nutrition however you can when you're, you know, plane wrecked, I guess. You know, because there's no potatoes just growing on top of the mountain, I guess. I guess I would first try to find something else to eat, but whatever. I hope you just get my point, is that, you know, you realize that this conventional box that you were thinking in, yeah, it's just a conventional box. There shouldn't exist a conventional box. Everything should be evaluated. I should evaluate everything without assuming anything has any credibility or any taboo thing is truly taboo. And you know, I should make the fair argument. So this kind of goes to other arguments you can make about, well, if you went out and assassinated people, okay, who had no life, you know, okay, they weren't supporting a family or doing some other thing. There wasn't going to be a whole holocaust of disruption if they disappeared and you just, you know, shot them in the back of the head while they were walking down the street and they never knew it. It is hard to make that into some significant moral crime. Okay, you know, it's obviously a violation of a social contract. I mean, I don't want somebody to do it to me. But as a real crime, that is a real destruction of something and a harm, a real harm, you could argue that it would be a minimal harm. You know, that you can't really find the harm. And this goes to these other circumstances that are kind of an unpleasant subject where, you know, people get hysterical. But there's a bunch of people on this planet who are really high maintenance and they're really low utility. So, you know, so they, you know, they're sitting in the, you know, they're doing that all day. And we're paying like $500,000 a year to prevent them from themselves to death. And, you know, it's almost like spending money stopping people from committing suicide. It's like, well, what's, you know, what's the theory that this is a productive thing to do, is to stop people from committing suicide? And then this whole idea of, you know, just having a rational appreciation for the fact that waste is a bad thing. And, you know, none of us are worth $6 million or something. You know, none of us are worth the society having to pay a fortune to keep us in some kind of dysfunctional condition. And yeah, so people get hysterical because, oh, you can't malign, you know, people in that circumstance. But you're maligning them not because of any bigotry or hatred. You're just pointing out the facts that, you know, if there's a bunch of broken toasters and, you know, they all, I'm okay, I'm trying, but, you know, it would all be fine. But, you know, the point is you can't make toast. You're consuming electricity. You're just not productive enough. There's got to be some standard. And the toaster should voluntarily say, yeah, I get it. I'm just not good enough. I'm not doing well enough. So yes, let's just gracefully exit me as a toaster, and then the other toasters that are more efficient and more functional than me can take over. Now, but people really can't have that conversation. It's some sort of taboo against it. It's even a taboo to suggest people should be allowed to voluntarily concede. Yeah, what are you doing? there's no point in leaving me plugged in. Because I can't use the electricity efficiently. I'm not going to get anything out of it. It's not going to be any good for me, and it's not going to be any good for your civilization either. So, yeah, let's just unplug it. And then once you get used to the idea of unplugging things, then you can, at some point figure out that this whole stupid show is such a bad movie, and it's time to just turn the projector off. Okay, enough of this bad script, done badly. Okay. Sort of, I'm getting around to the point. Sort of. All right. So in the physics argument, I make lots of arguments, but there's a real simple one where you say something like, look, it's a push universe. Things have to push into each other to have interactions. And there's no pulls. I mean, nothing can pull on something. It really does have to be push. And anytime you see something that looks like a pull, it's because there's a missing push. The push from one side is still working, and the push from the other side isn't. And so it moves in the direction where the push is missing. And so it's so simple. And you're just saying, oh, come on. People should be able to say, gee, that probably has something to do with the truth. Because pulls would be magic and, God or something. They can't be something, just can't be part of the real game. And so then in this philosophical thing, you're saying, gee, it shouldn't be hard to get people to understand that there's not much point in trying to convince somebody who's had enough of their life to keep living. Yeah, you know what I mean. I mean, convince them in some lie sense where, you're going to pretend, they have a future and they're going to be a wonderful time. Now, I try to convince people based on their utility and say that, if you can do something, you have some skills, then you should hang around and do the best you can with them to perhaps save the future. Maybe you'll be able to make the bridge over the quicksand, and prevent a whole bunch of harm. So you should hang around. But if you're pretty much dysfunctional and you're miserable, why should society think it's a good idea to try to reclimate you, into somebody who barely survives their discomfort and lives a life you wouldn't want to live? Why would you do that? It's just so illogical to interfere when somebody's figured out that there's no profit in it. And you're going to argue with them for what reason? And when they're not going to do anything. They're not going to cure anything or fix anything. All you can do is make them less of a burden, but they're still going to be a burden. So why are you interfering? Why are you getting in the way? What's the logic in it? And it comes down to some notion that God says so. So, that's where it all falls apart, is you're stuck with these people who just, myopically can't see past the fact that God must exist. And I guess in these physics arguments, the God is the quantum or some notion of a wormhole-y universe or some thing. I don't know. It's some sense that there's mystery and the Star Wars bar is out there somewhere and they're just dying to go there for some reason and drink some pink stuff, with a guy with an elephant head or something. I don't know. Yeah, it is a little bit. It's really hard to figure out, frankly, because these are people who understand that we evolved, okay, and that we're just circumstantially stuck in this position of being the smartest things on Earth. But that doesn't mean we're smart enough to deal with being the smartest things on Earth. we have anywhere near the competence to be driving the future for all the sentient life on Earth. And I think it's obvious that we're doing a terrible job of even managing ourselves, let alone managing the welfare of the biosphere. And obviously, the industrial complex of slaughtering other feeling organisms to unnecessarily produce convenient foods, whatever, happy foods, I don't even know what to call them, when clearly that's just a silly habit. That's cigarette smoking or something. It's just a nuisance, bad habit, and you shouldn't be allowed to torture stuff for a bad habit. That's illogical, nonsensical, ridiculous, frankly. So anyway, all right. So I'm struggling a bit with this video. Yeah. All right, try again. All right, so this is about having a conversation with even the intelligent people appear to be profoundly disinterested in, okay, science and the philosophical implications of evolution. So, I mean, if you do say the word free will, I guess that will provoke some interest. But again, it's such a simple subject, to say, well, and nobody even makes the argument that I think is so obvious. What the fuck would a free be? I mean, you can't, why would I want a free will, whatever that would be? I want a good will. I want a smart will. I want a knowledgeable will. I want a correct will. I want my will to be perfect. I don't want it to be free. Free isn't perfect, right? Free is all the way from, Rembrandt to, finger painting. Why would I want to have a will somewhere in between, somewhere in that range somewhere, some kind of will that isn't confined by some sort of perfect understanding? Why would I want anything short of having a complete and accurate understanding of reality and then have a will completely directed by the knowledge gained from that complete and accurate understanding of reality, right? That's the will I want. So what's the free thing about? I mean, where are you getting your free will from? I mean, what's the... it just doesn't make any sense. Free from what? You knowing what 2 + 2 is? Free from your knowledge that, let's say, it's bad to hurt things unnecessarily? free from that? What should it be free from? I mean, obviously a very confined and narrow will is what I would seek, not an imbecile's will. I wouldn't want the freedom to be cruel and stupid on purpose. Ooh, yeah, no way. I don't want that will. So it doesn't make any sense anyway, what the free idea is anything about. So I guess the point is they think this is the subject of free will should really be called a personally composed will, that I personally composed my will, that I caused me to be me. I mean, that's what people want to say, is I made me the great me that I am. When, no, I can't. I'd like to be able to take credit, but I can't take any credit. Just not possible, because I know all of these little crappy things that happened made me. And frankly, as some people understand, the crappiest things were the things I gained the most knowledge from. You know, the stuff that wasn't any fun. Yeah. The life lessons, the humiliations, the things that temper my sense of just skipping down the street and playing music and just being all full of the dance. Yeah, all of that I lost at about, whatever, 7, okay, because I knew there was nothing to dance about. There was every reason to, you know, get myself one of those steel helmets and just try to, you know, avoid all of the slings and arrows, because that's all life was going to be, is a bunch of burdens and tasks and agenda that had nothing to do with anything like what I want or what I'm interested in. So I did think of that earlier. I was thinking about friendships, and I was saying, you know, yeah, I did have very few friends, and I was thinking about why that is true, and it's because there's so few people that you can find have the same interest as you. You know, just a simple thing like they want to play hopscotch or something, and you want to play baseball, or, you know, some kind of thing like that. And you know, and then once in a while you find a person where, yeah, you both have the same kind of categories of things to do, and they're all similar things to do, you know, there's no obstacles in terms of you being able to interact in some way that's pleasurable, entertaining, interesting, educational, all those good things, where other people have all these, they have all these mannerisms, or they have all these interests, or they have this vocabulary, or they have this, or they have, you know, and there's just nothing to say, oh yeah, I'm interested in that. I want to do that. yeah, and so that, I guess, is a reflection on who I was, is that my interest had become very narrow, and I wasn't going to just drift into other people's activities. There was a lot of things I didn't find either interesting, and I found them tedious and repugnant even. Things other people liked doing. Yeah. But anyway, so it's part of, I guess, the explanation is that I have very few instincts in terms of relating to people in some way that is generous and open. Because I'm already, you know, my narrow capacity to understand what's interesting, let's get to the point, let's do the, you know, I just don't see the need to change who I am or pretend to be something I'm not. Yeah, it goes deeper than that, but, you know, because, like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, and obviously there are, you know, the people interested is just such a tiny number, just the tiniest number of people who can find me tolerable. And I, you know, I can't, I accept that as the truth. I watch my videos and see, I find them interesting, and I say, oh yeah, I can listen to him, you know, and I already know what I'm going to say, and I can find it interesting, which is, you know, maybe that's narcissistic or something, but whatever, it's just the truth. And so I don't see the obvious defect in the presentation of the arguments, and I frankly find it hard to believe somebody isn't a little bit sympathetic to some of the arguments. I mean, I'm not like, it's like even the veganism. I'm not as harsh, right? I'm just saying it's an absolute fact that torture be bad. And all you have to do is be able to say, okay, I'm a little bit dysfunctional. I can't quite handle life without my meat meal. Well, just admit that then. What's the big deal? I'm not asking you to do anything. if you can't handle the transition, you can't handle this terrible change in your life, you can't even do it once a week or, you know, even one day, you know, one meal, lunch or breakfast, you can't take the meat out of it, come on. I think you can make a little bit of an effort. It's not a big, it's not that draconian. And just say, okay, I'll do the best I can. And maybe the best you can do is pretty sucky because you don't want to be inconvenienced at all. But it's really hardly some kind of horrible imposition. So, oh, I'm just such an awful person because I'm going to try to guilt you or I'm going to try to do better. No, I think I'm being very generous in saying, I understand, okay? Change sucks. All right, but let's understand that change is necessary. And certainly don't take your liability and try to glorify it. You know, don't get on your horse, you know, with your hat and smoke your Marlboro. You know, don't sit there and say, oh yeah, this is really great. Yeah, you get, you know. No, don't do any of that shit. You know, don't sell the bad idea. You know, you want to be a drunk? Well, yeah, okay, that's, you're stuck. You know, you need your alcohol. Don't glorify it. You know, don't try to make it, hey, I'm really cool. Yeah. Is that a horrible, you know, I mean, it should be easy for you to hear it from me because I'm not, you know, I'm not going to bash you over the head with it. I'm just saying, look, you know, can't you logically understand the simple principle that you know you don't like suffering? And so you can know that the other things suffering in the world aren't having a good time, that it really sucks to suffer. And you shouldn't do anything to make their suffering more likely, okay? And especially for the future. We can't fix the mess here, but we can prevent the mess there. That doesn't seem like I'm asking much from you, right? You can wallow in your cesspool here and you can, you know, indulge in your debauchery and your disgusting bad habits. Just don't give the same disease to the future. Is that too hard? Is that asking too much? And even you religious people, look, you know it's a fable. You know, it's just a pleasant story that, okay, gives us some kind of hope and we have something to cling to and we have some sense that maybe if I pray hard enough, God won't kill me horribly. Please, God, don't kill me horribly. You know, and, oh, well, you know, I might even have an impulse, you know, sometimes to say, okay, well, if I skip properly or I do something properly, I'll win another day without torture or something. I'll win, you know. So I'm capable of having a superstitious moment. So I can understand. Okay, you need this bullshit, you know, to make your life livable and survivable. Don't give the disease to the future. Don't blight them with these fairy tales. You know, don't. Ruin their psychology so they have to sit there and be dependent on being irrational and disconnected from the reality. And yeah, I know there's pretty much no way you could be pro-life and a procreator if you recognize the liability that it means for your kids. If they have a serious understanding of their existence, it's going to feel pretty burdensome and frightening. So without the delusion that somehow it's all going to work out, yeah, there's good reason to think, no, I'm going to get fucking ground up in the meat grinder. That's all I'm going to get. I'm going to get shoved right into the teeth, right into the jaws of that fucker. And frankly, it's no fun living with that knowledge. But it's no good to live in a fake, phony, and fraud world. It's important to our integrity and our dignity and to the fact that we won't make messes if we acknowledge how easy it is for us to do it. You know, how easy it is for us to cheat at the game of life and pretend we're productive when we're incredibly destructive. And everything we don't do for that future is destructive. Because the future's big, the present is very small. All right, that was better. Yeah, a little better. All right, so I was thinking about having knowledge of things, and if we could know all of the negative lotteries we're entering all the time, and how burdensome that would be, what the real risks of our behavior is in terms of, you know, running over a cat or something, or doing something that's just, oh, that sucked. And, you know, just how the more awareness you have, the more intelligence you have, the more burdensome life is in those sense of understanding all of these liabilities and responsibilities. And it just kind of takes the fun out of, you know, being the pilot, you know, when you realize that, I can't just, you know, go away. I can't just fly the way I want to because these things are more precious and more vulnerable than I am, and they can't take it. And they're going to get hurt if I play around. And so I have to take all of it very seriously. It's like every step is a very serious move. Every roll of the dice, you know, there's real stakes involved. So it's like if you knew your complete genetic profile and then you were going to have a kid and you knew what all the little risks you were. Oh, yeah, there is a chance it's going to get that disease. There'll be a chance of this because I have a defective gene there and I have another one over there. And, you know, it would be just burdensome, right? So the knowledge would be burdensome because it makes you more aware of how much of this is out of your control, and that, you know, if you enter 500 shitty lotteries with a 500-to-1 odds of winning, you're going to win some, you know, maybe more than one. You know, and that's the game we're playing, where it's not like, oh, it's 1 in 1,000,000, or it's 1 in 10,000, or it's 1 in... Well, if you keep entering all of those lotteries, it's not 1 in 10,000 anymore, it's 1 in 1. There's a guarantee you're going to win one of those shitty lotteries. And so much of life is just made out of that, you know, the luck of the draw. And, you know, that's it. And you can't control any of it, but you can't see far enough ahead. You can't see enough of the details. And the more details you see, the more you try to engineer your life, and the more unfun it becomes. The more perfect the steps have to be, you know. I don't know what to compare it to. You could say it's a golf swing or a bowler or a baseball pitcher, and he has this whole mechanical, everything has to be in just the right spot, and everything has to be just the right way, and you know, to perfect what he's doing. Tennis serving, right? I don't know, some people play tennis, but, you know, you have to marvel at how much work somebody has to do to actually get their body to do all of that shit the right way so the serve actually can go 100 miles an hour. I mean, it's kind of amazing from my perspective, having played a little tiny bit of tennis, just how difficult it is to create all of that muscle memory and all of that capacity, and then to be able to try to do it each time the same way and to not make mistakes. And all of that is work. It's tedious, and it's probably very unpleasant. You know, to try to perfect that. And the same is true for living our lives, you know. So, I mean, I've made the point that, having kids would be the most undelightful, unpleasant thing I could possibly imagine. Just because, yes, you have to take it seriously because it's right in front of you. You know, I can worry about somebody else's kids, but it's like, you know, they're over there, so they're really not my problem. I can feel bad for them. I can do lots of things, but yeah, it's not a big deal. But if it's right in front of you and you're the one driving that bus, it just amazes me that these, frankly, glib imbeciles how little they are stressed by the incredible responsibility they have, because all they have to do is fuck up this serve a little bit, fuck up the interactions you have with those kids in just a little tiny way, and you're going to fuck it up big time. They're going to end up weighing 500 pounds at, you know, 25 years old, or they're going to be in a drug addict, or they're going to be this, or they're going to be that. They're going to be, so you have to take it seriously because the stakes are huge. But again, you don't, you're, you know, there's no instruction manual that'll give you perfect instructions. It can only give you a guideline. You know, try not to do this, try not to do that, try, and there's going to be 500 guidelines. And so it's going to be worse than, you know, perfecting your serve. It's just an insanely difficult thing to have any hope that you're going to perform well enough, that you're going to be able to do it, you know, and win. Yeah, you know, gain a victory by your own initiative and effort. Because again, deserve isn't going to have that much to do with it. There's going to be all kinds of other forces that are going to try to destroy what you're trying to do. You're going to end up with a tennis elbow or something, you know, and it's all ruined, you know. So again, it's just, this doesn't seem like a very challenging conceptual idea for people to talk about the huge responsibility of parenthood. I mean, you know, it should be kind of an important subject to a culture that's generally speaking fanatically pro-life, that they would take this idea of what people are having kids, the gigantic responsibility. It's just an insane responsibility. You're going to try to be a pro, you know. And do you have really any, do you have the skill set? You know, do you have any hope? I mean, are you 4 feet tall and you want to be a pro basketball player? I mean, what exactly is your strategy? You think you're really up to the task, up to the job? And this is, you know, I'm saying this, and there's so many people who, they really need somebody to give them a clue about reality. I mean, they can't control their own bad habits. They can't control their weight. They can't control all kinds of things about their own foolish existence. And yet they're going to tackle this responsibility. So it really is. You know, it's like somebody who's, you know, sat in a couch their whole life, and they're just going to stand up and say, okay, I'm going to be a professional tennis player. Oh, really? Yeah. You're not going to do that. You're going to do that exceptionally well, are you? Yeah, I don't think so. So, I mean, you know, hugely important, no conversation, and even implying that people really don't have some kind of liberal right to have kids, that, you know, it is a gigantic responsibility. And if you don't have, you know, if you don't have more than $200 in the bank, you don't even have a right to even think about it, let alone do it. So that's the other part, though. See, if you're intelligent, well, if you're just minorly aware, I mean, I didn't need, you know, I didn't need somebody to tell me I don't want to have kids. Okay, I knew it. And I certainly knew I didn't want to have them recklessly. And I certainly knew, well, gee, you know, you can have some control. I mean, you can wear a condom, and she could be on a pill, or you can use sponges, and you can do this, or you could pull out. There's lots of things you can do to make sure this accident doesn't happen, okay? You can drive carefully, and it's a fact. And yes, okay, maybe it's not as much fun to have two hands on the steering wheel and actually look at the road. Okay, yeah, that's not nearly as interesting as watching the movie on the dashboard, right? Or talking to somebody. But, you know, that's the job. That's the responsibility, is to, yeah, you got to do this right. And it's just, you know, nobody's teaching you have a responsibility to do it right. You really don't have the latitude of failure. Failure really shouldn't be an obvious risk. I mean, like, it's obvious, like 90% chance of failure. Well, then you shouldn't be playing that game. Yeah. And people should be allowed to tell you you shouldn't be playing that game. You know. So that's, and this is without even getting into some of the more obvious defects of where people actually have genetic defects and they just couldn't care less, you know. And that's just evil and cruel. No, that's not some sort of right. Yeah. Oh, the bigots, you know. No, it's not being a bigot to say there's a practical reality and you should give a kid every hope and chance of being able to succeed in their existence, not every liability and every kind of obstacle to overcome. It's a real horse race. And, you know, every horse should be at least entitled to four legs. You know, at least. All right. That's a little better, maybe. All right, we'll try one more break and see if it does me any good. All right, somebody will sum up with the statement that being a creationist is a huge responsibility. It's not just some sort of pinball machine. All right, it's not a game. It's not a trivial pleasure. It's this gigantic responsibility. The welfare of what you're creating is a real value, and it can be, and it's hugely important that it not be tortured. Okay, so this is like us doing some experiment, some life experiment. You're going to make, you're going to breed a bunch of animals and put them in a circumstance. And all of their pain and suffering is for your purpose. And the point here is there's no purpose. These lab rats of the human race are not going to cure the universe's cancer. They're not going to invent a miracle drug. They're not going to do anything to fix the universe. They can't do anything to fix the universe except disappear. The universe needs the infection to be eradicated. It needs the shot of penicillin. Because all these things can do is create the opportunity for broken and spilt and ruined and mess and waste. They can't do anything to enhance the universe. So all of your magical thinking, okay, isn't something the universe is going, ah, that was so great. That magical thinking thing is happening. Ooh. You know, it's not happening. They're not sitting in some, the universe isn't in some jail cell and they're being let out into the fields to romp around because human beings have this deluded notion that they're accomplishing something by torturing each other and the future. It's just really stupid. Okay, it's just not going to happen. So, you know, this whole game is your experiment in a way. You have the ability to vote against it, to raise your hand and say, no, I don't think we should keep breeding rats into a death game. And get ground up in the spinning wheels, the spinning knives. You know, you can look at the place they're living, and you can see it's full of all kinds of traps and vicious and wicked ways of smacking things to death. And again, you see it in so many people. There's so many people crippled by their life. 50% of the population will be in some form or another disabled by age 50. That's a pretty frightening statistic. It's a pretty high definition of failure. And it doesn't even include all the people. They're just marginal. They're just dragging themselves every day, dragging themselves through their life and trying to eke a little bit of dignity and happiness out of it. And all they're getting is a little bit. You know, they're getting a little tiny bit of food, enough to keep them alive, you know, to starve another day. And it's nothing to be proud of. And it's nothing to endorse, and it's nothing to push forward. Stop pushing. That's the minimum you could do, is stop pushing. I'd be grateful if you jumped in front of it, you know, and tried to slow it down and stop it. But the minimum you could do is quit pushing. Because it's a train to nowhere. Doom. It all ends. Every single one of these silly existences ends in a nice, colossal failure. All right, anyway, enough stated. So, till the next time, and such, and so forth, and whatnot. And hopefully, I can't say, you know, what's the point? Yeah, I can just hope that I'll have another week. You know, because, yeah, there is no guarantee. And that just sucks. It sucks living, you know, under this threat of death. I mean, we're all living on death row. That's not a gift. Not something a friendly person does to another human being. So anyway, till the next time, and such, and so forth, and whatnot.